Well, good afternoon. It's good to see you again this evening. It's good to see those who are members here at Market Street, and it's especially good to see those who are visiting with us. I see a lot of folks from Westview, and it's always great to see them and to reacquaint myself with them, who we spent so long a time and just a wonderful time with them. I think it's been now 7 years I've been gone, but we'll never forget the 13 years we spent with those folks at Westview. So good to see Alan Dvorak here. I've got to tell my Alan story, Alan, so you're going to have to bear with it again here. Alan's father and my father were elders together in Rantoul, Illinois for about probably 20 years, I think. And so I've known Alan all my life, and I guess he's known me all my life. The first time we ever preached, we split a Sunday evening. We had a 30-minute Sunday evening, and we were supposed to speak 15 minutes apiece. Alan went first. He spoke 32 minutes. I went and I spoke seven, but that was our first foray into preaching, and I think Alan's been doing it for a long time, and he's just a wonderful preacher, and it is so good to see him this evening here. Mount Pleasant, Tennessee. We used to go through Mount Pleasant, Tennessee when we'd go from Florence to Nashville, because 43 at that time went straight through that little town, but now I think it bypasses the town. Just a really beautiful southern town. And it's a town you really never hear much about until something bad happens. And in the fall of 2012, something very bad happened at Mount Pleasant, Tennessee. The star quarterback, age 18, and two friends, ages 16 and 17, were arrested for having sexual relationships with a 12-year-old girl. The little girl became pregnant. She ultimately had an abortion. She told the police that it was consensual sex, but because she was 12, they arrested those three boys and charged them with rape. Just a horrible, horrible situation. And really, it raises so many questions in my mind about what was going on in the minds of those three boys and in the mind of that girl. Here was a star quarterback that was being recruited from all over. University of Tennessee really wanted this man, this boy, to come and play football for them. And now instead of finding 4 years free, he's going to find maybe 25 years hard labor. And that girl, what type of environment did she come from that at the age of 12 she was sexually active? Where were her parents, her siblings? Any member of her family, why was there no one there to stop what she was doing or put an end to that or try to talk some sense into her head? But the sad truth is what we saw happening in Mount Pleasant, Tennessee, happened so many times all over this world. And the immorality of our children is repeated just so many times over. And even in the Bible, we read about stories that are just as horrendous as what took place in Mount Pleasant, Tennessee. I hope you've got your Old Testaments with you this evening. If you will, turn to 2 Samuel chapter 13. 2 Samuel chapter 13 is one of those chapters that is probably the most disturbing and tragic chapters perhaps in the entire Bible. There's not a ray of sunshine or hope in the entire chapter. It is a chapter that makes me wonder sometimes, well, why does God include this in His holy writ? And then it reminds me that God deals with realities. It begins this way. After this, Absalom, the son of David, had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Amnon was so distressed over his sister Tamar that he became sick, for she was a virgin. And it was improper for Amnon to do anything to her. This week we've been talking about people that I have called lost in the credits. The extraordinary lessons that come from ordinary people. And I told you up front that some of these lessons are the bad side of what some people do. Even ordinary people. And tonight we're going to get as bad as it comes. Because tonight we're going to talk about this Amnon that we find here in 2 Samuel chapter 13. Now who was this boy, this young man? Well, he was the firstborn of David, which meant that he was the heir apparent to the throne of David upon his death. that if when David died, Amnon would be the one that would take the throne and have everything to his disposal. Anything that he wanted would have been his in that nation. But the one thing that Amnon wanted the most was the one thing that he knew that was improper for him to have. And that was his half-sister Tamar. Within Amnon, there was a conscience. A conscience that said that his lust and his desires for his sister was wrong. And I truly believe that Amnon would have never acted upon his lust. Yes, he had those thoughts of perversion, and they're sinful. But his sense of morality stopped him from touching her. And I don't think he would have ever touched her until we read verse 3. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shemaiah, David's brother. Now, Jonadab was a very crafty man. Jonadab, first cousin to Amnon. And look what he says here in verse 5. So Jonadab said to him, "Lie down on your bed and pretend to be ill, and when your father comes to see you, say to him, 'Please let my sister Tamar come and give me food and prepare the food in my sight that I may see it and eat it from her hand.'" So Jonadab has this plan. This plan of deception. He tells Amnon, "You pretend that you're sick, and when your dad sees that you're sick, tell him, you know, the only thing that I really want that might help me get well is for my sister to come and prepare food for me and feed me." Well, that's what happens. Tamar is sent in, isn't it? And of course, this gives Amnon the opportunity to be alone with her. And if you know the rest of the story, you know that being alone with her, it says in verse 14, that he tells her of his desires for her. However, he would not heed her voice, and being stronger than she, he forced her and lay with her. He sexually assaults his half-sister Tamar. And then look at verse 15. "Then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that he hated with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he loved her. And Amnon said to her, 'Arise and be gone.'" He throws her out. She's disgraced. Eventually, her brother Absalom finds out what takes place, what has happened. Eventually, his own father David finds out what's happened and does nothing. But Absalom never forgot. And for 2 years, the hatred that he had for Amnon boiled inside him until finally he had the opportunity to have Amnon killed. Finally, he had the opportunity to revenge what he had done to his sister. And Amnon's life is taken from him. This eventually led to a civil war within Israel, so much so that David had to flee for his own life. All because Amnon had a friend. Amnon had a friend. It was a poet, John Donne, who once wrote, "No man is an island, entire of himself. Every man is a piece of a continent, a part of the main." And the point of that poem was that we as human beings, we cannot thrive alone. We seek out the companionship of others. We like to have friends. We like to associate with other people. And that starts very young, doesn't it? Can you still remember your friends in first grade? I can. I remember their names. I remember some of the things we did in first grade because those were my friends, my first friends. And we seek out to have this associations and these friendships, and we love to surround ourselves with people that share common interests. And that's as much true when it comes to spiritual things. In John chapter 1, when people found Christ, who did they go to first? They went to their friends and their family, didn't they? They wanted to share the message of Jesus Christ with those that they had the closest relationships to. And so they sought out those type of people. They sought out those friends. But the gift of friendship can sometimes be abused and perverted, can't it? And the story of Amnon is proof positive of the wrong kind of influence and friendships that can do damage to us. And even amongst children of God, sometimes we can seek out and have the wrong type of relationships. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 is a wonderful chapter about the resurrection. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, there's a verse just about halfway in that passage there that has been repeated and repeated many times over. We've read it many times over, and probably you already know what I'm talking about. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33. Now, if you got the old King James, it might say evil communications corrupt good manners, or the New American Standard says bad company corrupts good morals. Have you ever noticed that those words are in quotation marks? They're in quotes. It's thought that what Paul is doing here is that he's really borrowing from somebody else's work. And some scholars believe that what Paul is using here and what he's quoting from is a man by the name of Meander, who was a writer of comedies in the 4th century B.C. And that Paul lifts these words from Meander because it makes a point of what he's trying to get across here in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Now, what do we normally do with this verse? Well, here's what we normally do with the verse. Well, Paul's talking to teenagers. And so we like to take 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, and when we have a teenage class, we get all the teenagers together now, and we tell them, well, now we're going to talk about evil company or a bad company and how y'all not have that. And we're going to hammer on that, and we're going to use 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33 as our text. There is nothing wrong with that, believe me. But 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33 is as much for middle-aged people and seniors as it is for teenagers. In fact, when Paul wrote these words, he wrote it to the Christians at Corinth, young and old alike. He didn't stop and say, now, this is just a verse for your teenagers. He said, this is a verse that every person in that church needs to read and understand. Bad company can corrupt you. Well, what's he talking about? Well, if you look at the context in which this verse is found, he's talking about people who were denying the resurrection of themselves. They were not denying Christ's resurrection. In fact, if you look down in verse 12 there, it says, how do some among you say that there is no resurrection of the dead? They were denying that they themselves will join in part with this resurrection with Christ. And so here we've got Christians there at the church at Corinth who were nothing but bad company to other Christians. They were teaching false things. And Paul said, be wary of those people. Evil company will corrupt your good habits. Don't let somebody disrupt and abuse the truth. No matter whether he's called a brother in Christ. Really what Paul says in verse 33, it comes really from an ancient principle that's found back in the Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20. Who walks with wise men will be wise, but the company of fools will be destroyed. And so the wise man tells us that there's something about being wise and there's something about being a fool. And so there's really two sides here that Solomon speaks about here. He first talks about wisdom, doesn't he? And how wisdom is contagious. You walk with wise people, chances are you're going to become wise yourself. And do we not see that in the Bible with example after example of people who walk with smart and bright and wise people? And that helped them to become like that. Joshua walked with Moses. Elisha with Elijah. And Timothy learned from Paul. Wise men walking with wise men. And so Solomon says that will reflect upon you, that will in some way help you become wise. And when we think about that in our own lives, our parents and family members, maybe teachers and whatever it may be, if we associate with people who are wise, chances are we will be wise also. Now, let's first define what we mean by wise, however. You're probably thinking, well, we're thinking about IQs. Well, no, that's not what Solomon's talking about. Biblically divine, a wise person is someone who understands that all life is interconnected. That there are no isolated events or thought patterns, no isolated words or actions. That everything you do in life affects something in your life. What you did yesterday has an effect upon you today. What you do today will affect tomorrow and on down the line. A wise man understands that all life is interconnected. And when you understand that, that will impact everything you do. It will stop you from doing things, knowing that what I do right now will affect me tomorrow, the next day, and maybe the rest of my life. That's being wise. Now, the flip side of that is the foolish man, isn't it? Solomon says that that with fools, there's a warning. Now, you would think that in Hebrew poetry, it would go something more like this. If you walk with the wise, you will become wise. And if you walk with fools, you will become a fool. But that's not what Solomon says, is it? Solomon says the companion of fools will be destroyed. So what's the definition of a fool? A fool is a person who knows the difference between right and wrong, but they're willing to do the wrong anyway. A fool doesn't see the connection between what they say or how they act and how that affects the remainder of their life. In fact, he doesn't think it's going to affect them. He thinks for some reason that he's a special case and he can rise above all those things. Paul says back in 1 Corinthians 15, don't be deceived. Bad company can destroy you. And this, we need to be very careful about not associating, not calling the wrong type of people our friends. Well, how do you know if you're in bad company? How do you know that you're associating with somebody you ought not be associating? Well, let me give you a couple of things here maybe to think about this evening. And maybe if you put these things to test, it might help you to make wise decisions about the company you keep. First off, how do you know that you're in bad company? It's when you discover that your values are different than theirs. What they define as right and wrong is not what you've been taught all your life. It's not your definition of right and wrong. Maybe words and phrases that you use are things you've never in your life even thought about using. They're so different than what you've been taught and how you speak. The attitudes they might have towards their spouse, their jobs, their families is not the attitudes that you have or had. You see, there's some things that ought to just raise a lot of flags in our minds. What they see as entertainment, you never once even thought about things like that. And certainly their attitudes towards spiritual things are far different than yours. They have little respect for God and His Word. Going to church, don't do that. Instead of helping me get better, increasing my faith, they're dragging me down. You know, the sirens ought to be going off in our heads, lights flashing. And our conscience should be saying, you're with a bad person. You're with someone you ought not be keeping company with. When Jonadab concocted this scheme to get Tamar alone with Amnon, Amnon's conscience should have stopped it right then. But he allowed that man and his plan to fill his heart and his mind. And we see what happened then. Well, secondly, you compromise your sense of morality. You begin to act and react to moral issues like they do. And you begin to compromise your beliefs and your attitudes. Now, it may not be overt in that. It may be very subtle. Maybe on one occasion they urge you to maybe skip church. And they say, well, you know, it's just this one time. Or maybe they ask you to go to a movie or view a website with them and because you see it's no big deal. Or maybe they encourage you to take a sip or smoke something or inject something in your body because everybody does that. You start to feel the pressure to compromise that which you know is wrong, and yet you go ahead and do it anyway. That uneasiness that you might be feeling at that time is your conscience that has God speaking through it, telling you you ought to stop that and not listen to him. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 16, a wise man fears and departs from evil, but a fool rages and is self-confident. You know, a fool says that, well, maybe this isn't the best thing for me, but I'm strong enough that their behavior will not affect me. Solomon says, to think such is foolishness. Don't be led astray by that. You know, as much as we cherish our friends, as much as we like the association with so many people, sometimes people cannot come to Christ because of friends and associates standing in the way. Some people can't grow in the Lord because their friends hinder him and stand in the way. Some people fall away from the Lord because their friends encourage them to do so and aid them in that. And sometimes husbands and wives walk away from their marriage because friends encourage them to do that. It's been several years ago now. I was talking to a lady that was considering leaving her husband. Oh, she knew that her family would be greatly, greatly upset over this. She knew that what the church attitude would be. And I asked her, well, who are you going to associate with? Who's going to be your friend now? You're giving up everything. You know what her answer was? Oh, I've got a friend. I've got a friend. And come to find out that friend was divorced herself, had little regard for marriage, and was encouraging this young lady to walk away from her marriage also. You see, what that lady really had was a Jonadab. Bad company can corrupt good morals. And sometimes we let bad company be our counsels, be the people we confide in and we listen to more than we listen to anybody else. Proverbs chapter 1 verse 7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of the knowledge, but the fools despise wisdom and instructions." Let me tell you, folks, if people you talk to, and people you listen to, and people that you value their opinion does not start with the fear of God, do not listen to them. If they cannot start with appreciation for what God says in His Word and His commandments, and what he's taught us through his word, then they are not the wise counsel we ought to be seeking. I don't care how many degrees they might have behind their names. I don't care how long you've known them. I don't care if they're your closest associate at work or play or school, whatever it may be. If they do not begin with the fear of God, they are not wise counsel. So often we listen to everybody else, and really all we're listening to is a bunch of fools. Paul says in 1 Corinthians that those people there were listening to people who don't have the knowledge of God. And that's why they were being led astray. And that's why so many today are led astray, because we listen to the wise counsel of nothing but fools. Don't let that happen. And thirdly, you hide who you associate with. You ever hide your friends from your parents? Or maybe from your spouse? Do you find yourself in a position at times to try to justify the bad behavior of your friend? Have you ever said these words, "Well, you really don't know my friend as I know him. Yeah, you've got a bad attitude towards him. You just don't understand him." Are you always trying to make excuses for your friends? Are your friends always pushing the envelope more and more, and there you are picking up the pieces behind them and making the excuses and really telling them, you know, really the problem is you, not him, not her. Well, if that's the case, you got the wrong type of friend. In fact, you might be with somebody who's worthless. Because if you cannot tell your spouse who you've been with, or your parents who you've been out with, then you're not with the right person or right people. Now, I'm no way suggesting that we need to find a cave somewhere and board ourselves up in there and just keep ourselves unspotted from everybody in the world. In fact, in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 9, Paul speaks about that fact, that we are not to do that, that we have to associate with people of this world. We have to get in there and mingle. The only way we can be light and salt is to be amongst people like that. In fact, I dare say there are probably people here tonight that are here because of the influence of a good person who showed you the way to Christ, who showed you the things that you needed most in your life, and you followed the right person to God. Our problem is so often we follow the wrong person. Paul says something in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 through 17 there. In Ephesians chapter 5, he says, "See that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is." You know, ultimately, you decide who will be your friends. And I hope that when you think about those people that you want to make your closest associates and that relationship that is so strong, that's the right type of friend. The friend that is said in Proverbs chapter 17, verse 17, a friend who loves at all times and a brother born for adversary. That is that type of friend, that type of person that you surround yourselves with, and that type of person you marry. Stay away from bad company. They'll bring you down. Mount Rushmore was dedicated on October the 31st of 1941. The faces on Mount Rushmore are faces of presidents that mean a lot to our country. Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Roosevelt. Because of what these four men did impacted our nation in a tremendous way. Let me ask you this evening, who would be on your Mount Rushmore? Can you think of four faces that if you had to make your Mount Rushmore, those four faces would be on there? But let me ask you a better question. Would your face be on anybody else's Mount Rushmore? Is there somebody that you have helped, encouraged, that sees you as a good friend, a positive influence, a man or a woman that's held in high esteem, that finds their face upon that mountain? Well, that's something for all of us, I guess, to think about, isn't it? Well, I appreciate your attention this evening. We have the best of friends, don't we? And his name's Jesus. Our friend died for us. Our friend shed his blood for us. And our friend beckons us to come and take hold of what he's done for us. Become a child of God. If we can help you this evening to do that, make that known to us right now as we stand and we sing this song.